Hi, everybody, and thanks for joining our weekly podcast. I'm Robin Lewis, founder and CEO of The Robin Report, which, by the way, I always remind everybody, it is more than just a digital daily report. We really view it as a knowledge platform from which we communicate thought leadership on various strategic topics throughout the reports, but also these podcasts, webinars, and hopefully live events when COVID gets out of here. Anyway, and for the podcast, have so far been generally a conversation between me and our chief strategist, Shelley Cohan, who, by the way, is also a professor at FIT and Syracuse University. We decided that from time to time, depending on our topic, we would invite an expert to join us. And since our topic today is collapsed supply chains, today necessitate a transformation for tomorrow. And we do need an expert on this, and we have one of those today, Jim Hull, who is the retail CPG industry strategy executive at Blue Yonder, who will help us sort through this mess and the issues, and also will discuss with us long-term solutions. As we all know, nothing in the supply chain is short-term. And Shelley, as you know, you and I have been discussing this supply chain mess almost ad nauseum. In every piece of news and, you know, cable TV, it's talked about 24 hours a day. Anyway, we decided it's about time we start talking about solutions to the very many complex complexities of transforming the chain and what retailers and brands can do to protect themselves in the future from massive disruptions that we're seeing in spades right now. So, Jim, why don't you kick this off and start with telling us a little bit about Blue Yonder and what applications in retail your software helps in terms of the supply chain.
Awesome. Well, and thank you, Robin, Shelley, thank you so much. It is great to be here, and you're absolutely right. It is a highly topical conversation given where we are right now. So as you mentioned, Blue Yonder is a supply chain platform. We really help retailers, manufacturers, and 3PLs managing their end-to-end supply chain. So it includes everything from assortment planning, demand forecasting, replenishment and supply planning, warehouse management, transportation management, store operations and fulfillment center operations, as well as e-commerce order management orchestration, and kind of an end-to-end visibility capability where you can kind of see kind of top-down over the entire supply chain, how the chain is working and how the different nodes are working together, as well as where inventory is. And so we do this on an interconnected platform. We use advanced artificial intelligence, IoT technology, and hyperscale computing, which then helps the different functions within an enterprise both coordinate and collaborate in order to really optimize that supply chain and service the end customer. And we're also developing kind of a set of next-gen capabilities that really leverage the same artificial intelligence to do things like predicting supply chain disruptions before they even occur, estimating the actual store-level inventory, because we all know that perpetual inventories in store tend to have some slight challenges, and even kind of breaking some new ground in how humans and robotics can really work together to create both an efficient and a resilient supply chain. So that's kind of what we do and where we play.
That's great. And I know we're going to talk about AI in a little bit. So but before we get into all of the great things and AI helping with the supply chain, let's kind of back up and let me ask how did we end up in this mess that we're in today? If we could have a little background, because I don't know if it's widely known about all the different factors that have played into why we are where we are today.
Oh, yeah. And it is a bit of a mess out there right now. You're absolutely right. I'll say I've been in supply chain for about 30 years, and I've not heard C-suite and executives talking about supply chain to the level that they are today. It's so front and center because it's significant issues and broken out there. And we can definitely trace it back to last March. Certainly that rapid shutdown, the shift to work from home models and kind of those incredible adjustments that consumers, not only what they were spending their money on, but where they were spending that money. You know, we all remember the toilet paper and the cleaning supply shortages and all of that last year, but that was actually just the beginning of a very long cycle of disruption. Right. So yeah, if you think about like a typical retailer that's purchasing from overseas, they're making commitments like 6 months, even 9 months out in order to make sure that they can lock in that manufacturing time and then give it enough time for the product to make it across the ocean, through the ports, ultimately get unloaded and be out on the shelves. So as we come through last year, thinking about 2020, disruptions really happened in the spring into early summer. But then as we came out and you were looking at like maybe fall-ish last year, we were starting to see an uptick in cases, but we also had the promise of the vaccine. We were seeing that natural decline that happened through the spring and the summer. So as retailers were making their 6 to 9 month purchase plans, kind of thinking about middle and back half of 2021, there were a lot of positive signs going on. You know, so there was the retailers were, I'm going to say, optimistic on the bounce back that we would see in 2021. And so they made purchases that way. You know, the vaccines would cause the patterns to shift maybe a little bit back closer to normal, maybe even some pent up demand. So maybe you kind of even purchased a little bit more than you might think you need because people suddenly had that little bit more cash and you know, companies were willing to, okay, I'll have a little bit of a hybrid model so you can start to do some back to work, but also some, you know, work from home. And so retailers really kind of bought with that in mind. And of course, what happened in 2021, we all know the Delta variant and other things that came through. And it's not necessarily that the demand didn't fully materialize. It's that it materialized differently than the retailers expected. So they made plans, you know, to purchase a bunch of X because they thought X was going to suddenly sell. And now Y is still selling. And so if the demand, customer demand is what pulls product through the supply chain. And so even though oftentimes we think about a pattern of pushing product out to the customers, it truly is the customer pulling that back through the supply chain. And if that demand doesn't materialize, the product just basically just sits there somewhere in the pattern. You know, it's either on the store shelves, in the back room, in a warehouse, or it might even be sitting in a container out in the yard. And of course, in parallel with this, the labor reset is going on. There's a massive reset. You think about like some of the, you know, a truck driver on average makes about, you know, $40,000 a year or so for over the road. But in a lot of markets, Amazon is paying about $20 an hour for in market. And so over a normal year, you can make almost as much money being an Amazon driver as an over the road driver. And you get to go home every night. And so you have, you know, predictability there. So there's labor shortages on drivers, there's labor shortages at store level. And so all of this kind of combined into that perfect storm to see the disruptions today. So, you know, you think about what we call a container cycle. So how long does it take for a container, once it's loaded, to get, you know, through where it's supposed to go, get unloaded, and then be ready to reload again? And, you know, typically it would take, you know, get loaded on a container ship over in, let's say, you know, Southeast Asia. The ship would transit, you know, in a few weeks, you know, maybe call it 25, maybe 30 days to get over to the U.S. ports. And the port's really efficient. I mean, these guys are phenomenal at getting, you know, ship comes in, it gets to a berth, it gets unloaded. That container drops on a chassis, gets sent to its final location. The warehouse takes it in, unloads it, and that container's ready to go. So maybe a 40-day cycle, something like that. But now what's happening is in that same cycle, there's a few days being added at each of those steps. So maybe there's a delay or a labor challenge at the shipping port. So you add a day or two there. There's the backlog that's happening, at the port. So not even can I get to an anchorage. I'm out at anchor in open ocean for a couple of days. Then I'm waiting another couple of days in order to get to my berth. Maybe there's another, you know, 2, 3, 4 days that you're waiting for an actual truck to take the product to the warehouse. And then, of course, there's no guarantee that the warehouse has the labor needed to unload that product right then, or the space. Because, again, if the demand hasn't pulled the product out of the warehouse, they may not even have the space to put it. And so that container can now sit instead of like that 35 to 40 day cycle. It could be 60, 65, even 70 days for that container to finally make it through that whole cycle. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Yep.
And that's how you end up with a couple hundred thousand containers sitting off the port waiting to get unloaded. So it's just amazing out there what's going on.
Unbelievable. The extended, you know, Jim, the extended cycle time of just shipping alone, going from 40 days to 75, I mean, it's really mind-boggling. I don't think people can get their minds around that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, well, you know, President Biden kind of, he was the cavalry, right? Coming.
Yes.
And, you know, he got everybody together and he said, you're going to work 24/7. So, you know, that bit of intervention, I guess some people would think that relief is in sight, right? But I am betting that the devil is in the details, Jim. Can you talk to us about the upstream and downstream components of supply chain and what retailers and brands should be thinking about to pull product through the supply chain when their warehouses are already full of unsold stock? In other words, how should brands be thinking about distribution to the end consumer, Jim?
Yeah, you hit it right on, Robin. The analogy I always use on the supply chain is the old squeeze the balloon model. You squeeze the balloon in the middle, which is great, and we might empty the congestion that's sitting at the ports, but all it's doing is it's pushing the problems upstream and downstream. So,
yeah. So
do we have chassis available to move the containers? Do we have drivers available to actually move the chassis? Do we have labor available in the warehouses to unload that product? And what's happening all the way back at the upstream? Because now retailers who haven't received some of this product, you know, you think about some stuff that's coming in for the holiday, and if you don't receive it in time for the holidays, it's kind of a one and done. You know, you'll see some really nice discounts after the fact, you know, because people are, you know, like, buy for next Christmas. But what are manufacturers doing, even on the upstream side now?
Yeah.
Retailers are trying to think through their next set of purchases. They might be being a little bit more hesitant and pessimistic compared to the optimism that was out there, you know, 6, 7, 8 months ago. And so that's really where the power of this connected platform concept comes in. You know, so everybody knows, you know, if you've been in retail for a while, you know, retail is detail. It just is. That has been and always will be for hundreds of years that retail is detail. But what artificial intelligence now enables with this hyperscalable computing is you can actually get to detail at scale, which is just, it's absolutely the wave of the future and kind of how we get out of the challenge we're in. So you think about demand forecasting, for example. You know, just 5 years ago, the standard was you would create a demand forecast maybe for a group of products at a weekly level. You might use a weekly pattern to figure out what a daily sales pattern might look like, but generally it was all estimations, approximations, you know, historic data and forecasting algorithms. And here we are just 5 years later. The AI engines can consume hundreds of demand factors, things like weather, price, competitive price, day of the week, paydays, all of that stuff, and literally billions of pieces of data. And it can create this incredibly accurate picture of probable demand at the item location level for every day, looking out a couple of years. It's crazy amazing how much detail you can have. And then the really good systems can boil that up in a way that's actually consumable by a human. That's of course, the challenge. Because then you can just manage it where the AI engine will let you know about exceptions. It's like, hey, you might need to go look at this one because it feels weird. There's a problem percolating over here. Go in and take a look at it. And so now the humans interacting with the system are that much more efficient. Right. And at the same time, you've got that level of detail that, like, even one of our customers sells sushi. They make it in the morning and they sell through it by the end of the day. And so they're predicting demand by the hour to make sure that they sell through, because it turns out nobody wants yesterday's sushi. Go figure, right? so, you know, having this on that interconnected platform, that's where the information's readily available to the other supply chain functions. You know, thinking about things like Shelley was saying around allocation or assortment and personalization, and really kind of getting to that precise granular level of shopper behavior that can really play out and make decisions So instead of having to decide what product do I put in stores 3 months, 4 months, 5 months out, I can actually make decisions in near real time, you know, a couple of days as the product is landing at the onshore and actually finally making its way through the port or getting to those deployment centers where you can, you know, take a container and turn it into a bunch of different trucks and send it on its way. You can really make those very granular allocation and assortment decisions in very close to where it's actually landing at the customer. And so that really does get us to finally that detail at scale that can help pull us through the challenges that we're in right now.
Yeah,
I love the retail and detail. Rob and I last week were talking about how in the early 90s, Silicon Valley thought, oh, we can just throw some stuff on a website and become a retailer.
Yeah.
That turned out. Now we have mall operators buying retail stores. But retail, yes. It's just not as simple as, you know, putting a product on a shelf or a website and selling it. There's so much behind the scenes that needs to happen to get the right product in the right place at the right time. And I know last time you and I spoke, you discussed a supply chain network as opposed to a linear or more traditional supply chain. Can you talk through this paradigm shift that needs to happen in the industry and maybe some best practices for getting started? Clearly, like Robin said earlier, there is no short-term fix in supply chain.
It is so true. Yeah, the supply chain is, it's my background is I used to be in the Navy. And I worked on aircraft carriers. And you think about an aircraft carrier that's going, you know, 35, 40 knots, and you turn 1 degree and you actually run the risk of tipping the ship over and throwing airplanes into the water. And so supply chains are just like that. It nothing pivots quickly. And so retailers really need to be thinking out ahead right now. And this paradigm shift that you mentioned is all about the concept of a supply chain, which is, you know, a series of links, essentially is gone at this point. It's much more around a supply network where you've got a bunch of nodes in your supply chain. The customer can interact in a bunch of different places with your brand and with your, you know, retail operation. And ultimately, those nodes are all connected in a bunch of different ways. And so the real work now in supply chain, as opposed to it used to be just efficiently move stuff through a series of linear steps, now it's all about what's happening at each of these nodes in real time, predicting what's likely to happen. So again, using those advanced technologies to take probabilistic guesses of what the future is going to look like, and then cleanly orchestrating across all these nodes to make sure that they're interacting with each other and the end consumer in a way that drives both your service and cost to serve. A great example, one of our customers, you probably know them well, is they're adding micro-fulfillment centers as an extension to their store footprint. So now you've got the normal store, but you've got these micro-fulfillment centers that are going to, yes, they will do their normal job. You know, the primary role is accept e-com orders and service those in a highly efficient way and highly automated way. Awesome. But now that same node is an inventory source for the connected store. That same node can be an additional in-market source for other stores. And even to the point of, like, you know, when returns come in, you can now take those returns in, process them as part of this offline center and get them right back into the pipeline in near real time instead of having to work them all the way up and through. And it's things like that that you just can start to see that tying these pieces together and moving to, you know, multi-sourcing. So now think about it at the other side is the same item might come from drop ship from a vendor to the customer for one particular need. And yet that same exact item might actually even be sourced from a different vendor in a different way to service the micro fulfillment center or even a third location to support, like, you know, pop-up distribution centers and things like that within a market in a very short run to take advantage of a seasonal pop. And so all of this builds resiliency. It builds flexibility, which is exactly what we need right now, but it also adds costs. And of course, our exec listeners are going to be sitting there thinking about what's the dollar sign behind this.
Oh, yeah.
And it's exactly, it's that fine balance of how do I get enough flexibility to meet my commitment to my customer, which is going to be very different by retailer. And yet making sure that you can orchestrate those pieces to limit that overall impact on the cost to serve. So that's where some of the stuff that we've, you know, Shelley, we've talked about, you know, the IoT technology, the blockchain technology, things like, you know, the ability, I was amazed, again, I spend a bit of time with some grocers right now, and there's the ability for a sustainable fishing that occurs in a particular part of the North Atlantic. They put an RFID tag on where the fish was caught and use blockchain to track that all the way through until the customer basically can scan and say, where was this fish caught? And you can confirm that that fish was bought in a caught in a sustainable property, or you know, pharmaceuticals, where you can track all the way through to make sure there was never a temperature deviation, so you can truly ensure it's safe and effective, and you don't have to throw away a batch. So you know, bringing all these pieces together, that's ultimately how we're going to build back the supply chain. And to both of your points, none of this happens quickly. We really need to be planning out for 22 and even out into 2023 in order to shift this aircraft carrier over time.
Yeah, you know, Jim, you're doing a great job of clarifying, I believe, for our audience and certainly Shelley and I, the complexity of the supply chain is not linear. And, you know, there's so many steps in it and nodes, as you call them. And, you know, I've just been looking into blockchain over the last couple of years. And yeah. I believe that kind of a process, that kind of software is a major technology solution. You mentioned it, and you certainly know more about it than I do. But what I do understand that, yeah, it's like a transparent ledger, right? Yeah. Tracking in real time everything, every location and every function. So, you know, I'm sure you know that Walmart has been using it, at least in their grocery business. I don't know if they're using it in the rest of their business, but one anecdotal example, which I read somewhere, that before blockchain for Walmart, it took 7 days for Walmart to locate a farm in Mexico that grew mangoes, right? And the mangoes became contaminated. With the blockchain, the mangoes could be tracked in a matter, it took, what did I say, 7 days. With blockchain, the mangoes could be tracked in a matter of seconds. Now, all of Walmart's suppliers, of course, must participate in that program. Anyway.
Yeah, no, and if I can just add an anecdotal comment there, you're spot on. I think we all remember the romaine challenge that happened, and nobody knew where. We knew where it came from. We didn't know where it went. So everybody had to strip all the romaine off of all their shelves and just throw it away. And that's food waste, that's margin impact, and it's customer satisfaction failures. And things like blockchain, you're spot on, are helping to solve that.
Yeah. Anyway, the diversified supply chain obviously sounds like the solution. But here's another issue. Isn't it really just, you know, like for the large companies that can afford it? By the way, you know, Brian Cornell at Target, he views all of this investment not as cost, but as specifically an investment in the future. And that's what these guys have got to start thinking. They're going to have to spend what it takes to get into the 21st century. Anyway, but you know, I think there's a big challenge for smaller retailers. Certainly the big guys can, like Walmart, can do it. And of course, the mid-size would be a different issue as well. So, you know, can you take us through some of that?
You hit it right on. And Brian, I mean, he's of course brilliant, and I highly respect him, but he's thinking about it the right way. The word infrastructure has been in the news a lot lately, but you think about this as a company. Supply chain is your infrastructure, and making those investments now is what will keep you able to not only navigate current state, but something else is going to happen. There will be something down the road. What companies can do really kind of does depend on that size of the company. Larger companies like Walmart, Target, Amazon, they've been working with their supply chains for, decades really. We've heard things like, IKEA and Home Depot are actually, buying private vessel charters and their own ocean containers to bypass some of the challenges. So, that deep pockets and scale across the networks It really kind of makes that viable for those large companies. And so, you know, as they try to optimize their supply chain networks, they're going to have visibility into all those pieces. They can make those infrastructure investments, and they can really leverage that scale to help keep that cost to serve at least under control. It'll go up. We're going to see price inflation. We're going to see some of that get passed on, at least in the short run. But at least they can manage through it and keep it, you know, at least under control. While, and they're also going to try to be stealing market share. Let me jump to the other end of the spectrum. They, you know, talking about size of the company, there's actually a set of these relatively small companies that are probably going to do okay. The ones that have, you know, local domestically sourced, you know, farm to table type companies, you know, places that don't necessarily depend on this global supply chain, they'll have some disruptions. You know, the microchip disruption is going to hit all of us. You know, steel, all of us need steel, but you know, some of these companies are probably going to get through okay because they're just, they're small enough that they can take advantage of some of these local patterns where people are now buying food instead of eating out, or you know, they're staying more local instead of traveling overseas. And so I think they're going to do okay, but it's really that that mid-sized company that's going to probably end up losing share to the big boys. You know, think about those companies, you know, with, you know, somewhere between 100 and 1,000 stores or something like that.
Right.
They're large enough to be impacted by the global disruptions, and yet they just don't have those deep pockets. They can't go out and buy their own, you know, ocean containers. And so all of this is happening, and then in the background, the manufacturers are still going to have limited supplies in the short run. And so if I'm a manufacturer and I'm a CPG provider and I can service, you know, three of my big boys or 10 of my mid-sized guys, I'm going to choose to service my big ones because I know that I need to keep them happy. So, yeah, that's really where this whole orchestration and the supply network paradigm, instead of the chain, thinking about it as a network, you know, these, they're going to be dealing with constraints for, you know, at least a while. I mean, I've heard projections, you know, early to mid next year. I've heard it all the way through end of next year. And at this point, I think it's anybody's guess to see how long it's going to run. But it's certainly going to be there for a while. And so by doing things like improving their demand forecasting, delaying those allocations, and using some of this technology that can stand up pretty quickly nowadays, you know, you can stand up a demand forecasting tool in 12 weeks now. Doing those steps now can help get through where we are and navigate the next several months, service the customers, but actually still have that infrastructure in place when, you know, the demand truly does find that new status quo sometime in 2022.
Right. That's interesting. I think one of the outcomes of this more diversified supply chain that distributes closer to when the consumer is actually purchasing items may lead to less assortments. But, you know, Robin and I, we've been talking about this paradox of choice and how we're so over-assorted and there's so many different choices.
Yeah.
Consumers just oftentimes walk away because it's just too much. So maybe that outcome's not such a bad thing. Are there other disadvantages with this idea of supply chain network? And while you're at it, if you don't mind, what are some of the biggest advantages of this shift in supply chain besides the obvious, which is never, ever, ever being in this position again?
Let's all hope on that one, right?
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And by the way, I love the conversation around the paradox of choice. You're so correct in that. I mean, you walk up and down the toothpaste aisle and I'm continue to be amazed at all of the different, you know, styles, flavors, and options, and it can become overwhelming to the shopper. And so kind of that SKU rationalization that's happening both at the retailer and the manufacturer really does, I also personally think of it as actually a little bit of a good thing that's happening, but we'll just have to see how long it lasts, because each one of those flavors was added for a reason, and so they were cut back because of the challenges. At some point over time, there's every chance that we'll see it creep right back in. But yeah, you know, the benefits, like you said, they're pretty significant. You know, the ability to pivot as customer behaviors change, responding to disruptions like the Suez Canal and things like that. Like I said, you know, one of the phrases we always use is, you know, this too shall pass, but something's going to come right behind it. And so the ability to really best serve that the consumer from any point in the supply network, all of those are really, really important. But again, the balance is to make sure you can do it profitably and efficiently. You know, so you know, they're making the plans and making those investments now and really thinking through a strategic roadmap of which capabilities do I need to stand up when, how do I build this just like a foundation, brick by brick, really kind of making sure that we get that, that'll get us through the current supply chain disruptions and the labor challenges, but also positioning companies for that, that great future that's out there waiting for us.
Yeah. You know, Jim, this has been terrific. I wish we could go on for another couple hours.
Me too.
I think we're getting to the end here, but I, before we do, I just wanted to make one last comment. First of all, it's apparent to me now, having had this conversation, that what you guys do is the future. And as I have said and written ad nauseum for some time, I've been calling this the distribution century, and it's on steroids with technology, right? And supply chain is perhaps the core piece of distribution, obviously from creation of the product all the way to consumption. And the potential at the end of the day, as well as the solution to this mess we're currently in, is a seamlessly integrated and totally transparent supply chain network that provides the most efficient, effective, fluid, and flawless movement of goods to the ultimate consumer. And this is what you guys do. So thanks again, Jim, greatly for bringing this to us.
Oh, my pleasure. I could not have said it better myself. So thank you, guys. I really appreciated this time. And anytime, I would love to chat.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. For our listeners, you can find more of our podcasts on Apple, Spotify, Buzzsprout, and therobinreport.com. And please follow us on social media, link in with us, and follow us on Twitter for the latest thoughts about the industry.
And I want to close by thanking all of our listeners for tuning in. And as I've said every Friday, if you guys have anything, any topic that you've been thinking about that's major, and you would like Shelly and I to, you know, to do one of these podcasts, please email me at robin@therobinreport.com. And thanks again.